Okay, so now, I hope you've all had a good Christmas. Now, if you're eagle-eyed, which I'm not, and you've got good glasses or something, you might have noticed that at the front here, there's some things happening. Can anyone tell me what can you see what's happening at the front? What's strange about the crib scene today?
All the shepherds and the three kings and the angels had came to see the new baby.
They have, brilliant. That's a good summary of what's going on. Thank you. What's happening out? What else is happening up here?
There's some string leading elsewhere.
There's some string or wool leading elsewhere. Now, anyone here do knitting? Some of you do knitting. Okay, louder. Knitting's amazing, isn't it? Have you ever seen? So you take one string of wool like this, and you knit it, and you create a whole jumper. That's amazing, isn't it? To sort of thread those things together. Now, the reason I'm talking about knitting and the nativity scene is that in our passage today, Matthew is taking a story, and he's knitting lots of themes together. And he's creating something quite amazing in terms of what he's trying to tell us. But it's quite hard to get your head around. So we're going to try and follow the threads today and find out what's going on. The story's quite basic. You all know the story. So basically, the wise men, here we go, the wise men here, have been to visit all three kings. We sometimes call them kings, but it's called Magi and wise men. They come to visit the baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph. Jesus might have been a bit older by this stage, maybe a toddler. And they're giving him the gifts. But they'd gone to see Herod on the way, and Herod was not a very nice man at all. Herod was king at the time over Jerusalem. He was put there by the Romans. And he really hated the idea of anyone else possibly becoming king. So when he heard the idea of there's a new king of the Jews being born, he wanted to get rid of that king. And so when the wise men didn't come back to him to tell him where he was, he got furious. And he went and sent for all the children under two in Bethlehem and around to be killed. You might think, is that believable? Would a king really do that? Well, yes. Even these days, we get some horrible rulers. But he was pretty brutal, Herod. He'd often had his sons killed, just as a rumor about them trying to take over from him. And a few children in a small village was nothing to him. So that's a really sad part of the story. But Jesus was safe because Joseph was warned by an angel to go away and head off to Egypt. So he went off to Egypt until Herod died, and he came back to Israel, and Archelaus, who was the Herod's son and become king over Jerusalem, he was even worse than Herod. In fact, they got him kicked out in the end because he was so bad. But Joseph decided it wasn't safe to stay near him, so he went up to a place called Nazareth. And that's the story. That's basic. It's simple. But Matthew, as he tells a story, he weaves in these Old Testament prophecies. And he's sort of saying this fulfills what was said in that prophecy. But actually, when you look into it, it's quite hard to see what he's going on about. Because when you say that's fulfilled a prophecy, you might be saying, well, in the Old Testament it said this would happen, and this is what's happened. But that's not actually what's going on here. The first prophecy isn't talking about what will happen in the future, it's talking about Israel in the past coming out of Egypt. The second prophecy is talking about Israel going into exile at the time of Jeremiah. And the third prophecy, well, you can't actually find it anywhere in the Old Testament. Matthew's doing something much more subtle here. He's knitting things together in quite a clever way. So, now, this is where I need your help. We're going to follow the threads, okay? So, do you want to follow this thread and go and find what's the end of it? Okay. Good. Well, someone's been saying, changing the slides for me. Thank you. Do you want to bring it back then? Are we done knitting? Yeah, bring it to me.
I know
what's the message. Okay, so the first thing. Do you want to hold it up high so everyone see it? It says Egypt. Egypt. So Joseph had to go to Egypt to be safe from Herod. And then he'd come back out of Egypt. And so Matthew quotes from Hosea chapter 11, verse 1. It says, out of Egypt I called my son. But here he's talking about Israel, because Israel were a nation. They'd come out of Egypt under Moses, and they were kind of called God's son, through the Old Testament, often referred to as God's son. But Israel often messed up. They sort of rejected God as father and went after other gods. They did all sorts of horrible things and bad things. Sorry, let's turn this over. That's it. There we go. So it's referring to Israel coming out of Egypt. There we go. Israel messed up. But now we have a new son. Jesus is kind of new Israel. He's going to start things again. Do you want to turn to the next one? There we go. We've got Jesus heading off to Egypt. Oh, you're doing so well. There you go. That's it. Hold it up high. Yeah. Now Jesus is a new son. Where Israel failed, Jesus is now going to succeed. And so in the next chapter in Matthew, when Jesus is being baptized, there's a voice from heaven, and God says, "This is my son with whom I am well pleased." Israel kept failing to please God, but Jesus had pleased God. Israel kept doing wrong, but Jesus always did right. He always did the perfect thing. And in a chapter after that, in chapter 4, Jesus is sent into the wilderness for 40 days, and like Israel, went into the wilderness for 40 days. But when Israel were in the wilderness, they kept failing to trust God, they kept failing to obey God, they did all sorts of things wrong. We're going to be looking at that over the next few weeks as we do Numbers. But Jesus always resisted temptation. He always did what was right. Jesus was coming as a new Israel to do the right thing. And Jesus was coming to create a new people, a new Israel, that would be his people. And we're called to be part of that. We're called to live better than the old Israel, to learn the lessons from the past, and to learn to live like Jesus. Jesus who came not just telling us what to do, but living it out, giving us an example to follow. So in 2026, will you follow Jesus' example? Will you seek to live to please God, to resist temptation, to be part of that better Israel that God is calling us for? So that's the first thread from Hosea 11, verse 1. That's a fairly easy one. Let's do the second thread. Do you want to come find the next one? I'm just on the floor for a moment. That's fine. Thank you very much. Okay, run back. So this one is about a place called Ramah. Now, Ramah doesn't appear in the story. Bethlehem appears in the story. But Ramah and Bethlehem both were linked with Rachel. Rachel was Jacob's wife, one of Jacob's four wives. He's his favorite one. And in Genesis, it tells us that he buried her in the Promised Land. But different traditions grew up about where exactly she was buried. So one tradition put her buried near Bethlehem, and the other tradition put her buried near Ramah. And they weren't that far apart, but they were a distance apart. And so Matthew's playing around with these two traditions about where Rachel was buried. So in Bethlehem, what's happened? All the two-year-old and under children have been killed. And you imagine people being really, really upset about that, not just the parents, but the whole village being upset about it, and probably the surrounding area. It's devastating. We saw something, you know, that attack in Southport last year. It was devastating to see those young children killed. And what was happening here was a sign of how horrible and oppressive Herod was. But that sort of thing happens around our world today. It's always happened in history. We're very blessed to live in a country where it doesn't happen much at all. So Matthew's talking about that, but he refers back to this verse about Ramah. Because Ramah is also seen as a place where Rachel was buried. And this verse in Jeremiah is picking up on the idea of Rachel, but picking up on her weeping for her children. Because Ramah was a place that when the Babylonians invaded, the people were taken to Ramah, ready to be taken on to Babylon. A kind of exile. And again, it was really sad. So let's put the sad face up. And it's quite a powerful verse, and it says, "A voice heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." Jeremiah was talking about the exile. Matthew's saying, well, under Nebuchadnezzar as an oppressor, Matthew's saying, well, under Herod, this same kind of oppression is happening, and it's sad. But actually, it even links back further to the time of Israel in Egypt. Because what happened to Israel in Egypt? Pharaoh, who was king of Egypt, was also a brutal and horrible king. And what did he do? He ordered all the babies born to the Israelites, all the baby boys, were thrown into the River Nile and killed. Again, deep sadness and weeping. But Moses was miraculously rescued. He was put in a basket, and the princess of Egypt rescued him, and so on. And then Moses grew up, and he was told by God to lead Israel out of Egypt to the promised land, out of oppression into freedom. So actually, in these stories, there is hope. In the midst of a story, there's horrible sadness and upset, but there's also hope of a better future. And in the story in Jeremiah, interestingly, Jeremiah, if you read Jeremiah, the book, it's full of depressing stuff. I don't know if you've ever read Jeremiah. It's going on and on about how God's going to judge the people, they're going to be taken into exile, it's all going to be bad. But actually, if you read chapter 31, chapter 31 is the exception in Jeremiah. Chapter 31 says, actually, God is going to rescue you, he's going to bring you back from exile, back to the promised land, everything will be okay in the end. And this verse in chapter 31 is the odd verse out. It's the only verse about weeping and sadness. The next verse says, stop weeping. God is going to rescue you. And of course, when we come to Herod, Jesus is born. God comes to be with us, but comes and lives among an oppressed people that are being killed by their leaders. And yet there is hope because he is rescued. And he will one day bring us to freedom from all oppression and evil, even from sin and death itself. Jesus comes to give us hope in a world of oppression. This is the Old Testament theme that Matthew's knitting together with the other themes to show us how important this baby being born is. Brilliant, thank you, Ewan. Okay, Rachel, do you want to do the last one? I'm going to follow the third thread. Where's that going to take us? We've been to Egypt and Rama. And now we're going to go to Nazareth. Yep, Nazareth. Okay, so Jesus ends up in Nazareth, and he grows up in Nazareth, as I'm sure you all know. And then Matthew has this quote. He says, and so it is that he will be called a Nazarene. And it's almost like a climactic quote. He'll be called a Nazarene. But often when this is translated, people say it just means someone from Nazareth. That's not that exciting, really, is it? Someone from Nazareth. What's going on here? If you try and look for the quote in the Old Testament, you can do it quite easily with computers these days, you won't find it anywhere. The word Nazarene doesn't appear anywhere. In fact, Nazareth doesn't appear in the Old Testament. It probably wasn't founded as a place until towards the end of the Old Testament period. What on earth is Matthew going on about here? Why is he so excited about him being called a Nazarene? Now, questions like this, you can read the commentaries and you'll get lots of different ideas. So what I'm saying isn't the consensus by any means, but this is what I'm persuaded is what's going on. The word Nazarene is linked with the Hebrew word nezer. It's the same root. In Hebrew, roots are really important. And that word means branch. And the word branch is really important because it's often used as a title for the Messiah, the Christ. So, most famously, Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1 actually uses the word Nezer. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, from his roots a branch will bear fruit. Thank you. This is one of the famous Isaiah quotes about the coming Messiah, about the king that everyone's looking forward to, the greater king, the better king, the Prince of Peace, the mighty God, and the wonderful counselor, and so on. Jesse was David's father. David was the great king that God promised would always have his son on the throne. And so what Matthew seems to be saying here is that in this word Nazareth, in Nazir, in this idea of branch, Jesus is given this title to be the Messiah. But I think there's more to it even than that. As you take the word branch through the Old Testament, you come to a verse in Zechariah, and it says this, here is the man whose name is the branch, and he will branch out from his place and build the temple of the Lord. Now, in Jesus' time, when Jesus was born, a temple was being built in Jerusalem. Who was it being built by? Herod. Herod, the guy who kills children. There's question marks about whether that's a good thing or not, surely. He's not a son of David, he's not a descendant of David, and yet he's building the temple that the Jews become very proud of. But Jesus comes as the branch to build a new temple. But the temple that Jesus comes to build isn't a temple of bricks and stones. It's a temple of living stones, of people, of you and me if we follow Jesus. And so Jesus comes and he builds a temple. It's a temple not stuck in Jerusalem on foundation stones, but a temple built on him as the foundation stone that spreads throughout the world, including us here. A place where people can come and meet God. Later in Matthew, Jesus says, where two or three are gathered together, there am I with them. When we gather together as Christians, wherever it may be, in church buildings, in other places, Jesus is with us. And our hope and prayer is that people will come and join us and meet with God themselves, just as they're meant to meet with God in the temple. Jesus the Nazarene, I believe, is a title that says he is the Messiah coming to build a new temple. And that temple is us. So as we go into 2026, will you commit to helping to build, be part of that temple and to build it up, to be a place where people can come and meet with God? Will you have that hope that Jesus offers, that despite the oppression we may face, Jesus has come to rescue us and give us freedom and help us to be part of God's kingdom and his eternal rule? And will you follow his example and live the life to be the new Israel, better than Israel that failed in the past? Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Pray that you would help us to live by it, that we may build your church and be your people and know your hope. In your name we pray. Amen.